2015, she created her very own agency, Aiden Creative, with a passion for building extraordinary teams. When the opportunity arose to work for Avana, she knew it was time to start her next journey. Without further ado, we are thrilled to welcome the inspiring Tara Ossipoff to the show.
I just want to start off and say, like, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We're super, super happy to have you. And I'm sure our listeners are really excited to hear everything that you have to share with us.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's been a long time coming. So this is really great. Thank you for having me.
Now, I know that, like, your career has been really amazing so far. But when you told us that you actually started out in a completely different path, you started out with a career in geology, or like a education in geology. Can you tell us about how you went from that to where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm not sure if you had picked this up, but I actually am in a completely new job now since we last spoke. So it's interesting. I think that, you know, you're in high school one day and you have to raise your hand to go to the washroom, and the next day they want you to pick your entire career. You know, at that young age, I don't think that we have the capacity or the ability to understand that we're choosing our entire life and what we're going to be doing. And so there's a lot of pressure in that. And I decided I wanted to go into geology because I had this romanticized idea that, you know, I'd be climbing volcanoes and trekking in these unknown territories to be able to study the earth. And that wasn't the case. Once I had got into geology, I realized that actually I'd be probably working on an oil rig somewhere in Saskatchewan and Alberta. I decided that's not what I wanted out of my life. And at the time, my brother had just passed away. I was 21 and he was 22, and we were super close. And I just had decided that I wanted to do something that was more fulfilling for me. And so I quit and I went traveling for a year. I'd met some really interesting people that were doing things that they loved. And I thought, hey, I could do that too. I moved to Vancouver. I went to school there, and I actually went to school for fashion marketing, which was great. And then afterwards, I was going to move to England. I had an internship there, and I'd come home to Regina just for a period of time, or what I thought was a period of time, until my internship in England started. I was working for a temp job at this real estate brokerage. This man had said, you know, you're really good at this. I was doing marketing for them. And he said, you know what, you're really good at this. You should start your own agency. And I was like, well, that's crazy. And then I was only going to be there for a few months. And every day he would pressure me and be like, you can do this. I believe in you. You should do this. And it's really interesting. The power of someone believing in you really enables you to believe in yourself, or it can enable you to believe in yourself. And so a week before I was due to leave, he had said, listen, do this and I'll give you free rent for a year, because he owned a bunch of commercial properties. So then I was like, okay, this guy believes in me so much that he's willing to do this for me. How can I pass this up? So I started to stay and start an agency. And then I did that for 7 years before leaving and doing what I'm doing now, which is I just started working in real estate development, actually, interestingly enough. I just started as the vice president of Avana, which we build rental properties across Western Canada. So it's a lot. It was quite the journey to get to where I am.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's crazy that someone believed in you and really pushed you into that. Is fantastic. Can you talk a little bit about Aiden Creative and the journey that you took with that?
Yeah, sure. So when we first started Aiden, I had a business partner, and, you know, it's interesting because I definitely couldn't have gotten to where I did without my business partner. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like I started the agency with her because I was a little bit too afraid to take the leap by myself. But after the first year, I bought her out and I realized that I could do it by myself. But sometimes we need that push to get started, or we need that help, right? So after that, the agency was growing and we realized that we were kind of a jack of all trades. And so we did sort of everything under the sun. We're a new agency and I was 26 years old, and we'd be in a meeting and someone would say, hey, can you do this? And we'd say yes. And then we'd go back and Google what that was. I just didn't. And so that After about a year, I decided that that's not what I wanted to do anymore, that I wanted to be a hyper-focused agency. And so we broke it down and we just focused on design for a few years and we wanted to become masters of design. I think we got to a really good place with that. And then we wanted to add back in some marketing aspects and we decided we wanted to do really purpose-driven marketing. And so what that means is we wanted to, you know, help brands tell and share their purpose rather than their product first. So purpose first, product second. And we believed by our research that that would really enable brands to become more cult-like and create, you know, a genuine following and turn, you know, customers into loyal brand advocates. For a couple of years, we just focused on purpose-driven marketing and design and it went really well. And then when we went to something called the Cult Gathering, it's a marketing conference in Banff. It's really great. And it has some of the biggest brands in the world. And they're all talking about, you know, how they became a cult-like brand. I left that conference being like, wow, this is so inspiring. This is so cool. I love this because of the person that I am. I just have no fear. So I reached out to the person who runs the conference and who owns the conference. And they actually owned an agency as well. And I reached out and said, hey, I think I'm going to start my own conference here in Saskatchewan. I'm wondering if you would give me, you know, a bit of your time. And I reached out over LinkedIn. And it was interesting because I knew that was risky because I was going to be starting my own conference and I'm reaching out to another conference owner. And he could have told me, you know, to get lost, but he didn't. He said, yeah, I'll give you 15 minutes. And then we talked and it was an hour and a half later. And we were so aligned in the way that we were thinking. And it was really cool because he was like, yeah, we've got to find a way to work together. And at the time I was like, yeah, this is cool. Well, you know, we can do some projects together and whatnot. They had a really big agency in Calgary called Cult. And their conference called the Cult Gathering. They actually were really, really vital part of bringing the conference together because they ran a conference before. They gave me so much advice and they helped me secure some really big speakers. So I was super grateful for that. They asked if I would be interested in joining their firm and bringing my team along. We went through a merger in 2020 in the middle of a pandemic, which wasn't the plan. The conference that we had planned never happened because of COVID. Our agencies became one. I got an opportunity to work with Cult, which I'm so grateful for. And I learned so much from them. And I was with them for just under a year as their VP of Client Success. For me, it was really worth joining the agencies and merging because we were so aligned in the way that we thought. They realized that, you know, the most cult-like brands in the world drive with their purpose first. That's how we became really aligned and helped me to make the decision to join forces. And so, yeah. I spent just under a year with them. I got to be part of their conference that I went to years before and was inspired by. So it came full circle of me wanting to learn from them about conferences to working with them to being part of their conference. So it was really great. And I'm really grateful for everything that I learned working with Cult.
Yeah, it's a really cool story too. Just the fact that like you did decide to reach out and the fact that it all turned into this really awesome opportunity for you as well.
Yeah.
So when a company is acquired or I guess in your case merges, what happens to all of the employees? Like, do they merge with you or?
Yeah. They came. Yeah, they came as well. Awesome. And within the first year, you know, we had some of them leave and with the CEO of Cults and the Gathering, well, one of the owners actually, his name's Ryan Gill and he's a really smart guy and he was a really great mentor to me in many ways. And same with their president, Brad. He said to me, Ryan said, you know, so you're going to lose 60% of your staff in the first year of this merger. And I said, no, there's no way. You know, they're so happy with that, like Aiden. And he's like, it's not Aiden anymore. It's Cult. And so I did lose a very high percentage of my staff in a very short period of time. It's just a very big cultural difference. And I think going through that merger is like that. It's joining two companies and things that were are no longer. And it's a lot of change for people. And so we did lose a lot of Aiden staff during that time.
Looking back at this merger and like on a business side and then a personal side too, is there anything that you learned from it? Is there anything that you wish you knew ahead of time?
I mean, it's kind of like what I'm going through now. I think I'm really trying to put hindsight in the present because hindsight is 2020, as they say. And I think as you're going through like a really big challenge, it's easy once you're through it to look back and be like, whoa, that really shaped me. And, you know, that helped me to grow and this and that. But it's hard to do it while you're in it. While I was, you know, going through this merger with Call, I just tried to be really present during it all. And I understand that it was going to be a rough process in some ways because it was a very big change, but just be grateful for everything that I was learning. You know, it was an agency that did things a lot different than we did because they worked with, you know, a lot bigger clients than we did. They ran the agency a lot different. And so I wouldn't say that there was anything that I, you know, wasn't prepared for other than, you know, losing some staff. I think every moment I was just trying to be super present and grateful for the opportunity to learn from an agency that was older than ours and a lot of really had a lot of of experience. So
if you were to speak to a young entrepreneur who is facing, you know, the possibility of a merger in their future, is there any advice that you would give to them?
It really depends. Like, it can be a financial decision. It could be a career growth decision or career trajectory decision. It depends. You need to make the decision that's right for you and make sure that you're making it with your values and not just a quick decision based on, you know, money. I think I would say just to remember that owning a business doesn't define you. Mm-hmm. And at one point I was really afraid to let go of my agency and do this merger because I thought that my agency was part of who I am and it isn't. So if you own a business, it can be really hard to separate yourself from that business owner or that company that you created and started or that you own. And that isn't you. You're so much more than that. And I think you have to, you know, weigh your options and make the decision that is best for your future and not let the past and what you've done with this business define who you are. Letting go of that makes the decision a lot easier because for me, it was like, well, am I still Tara if I don't have Aiden? Because I created this persona around owning an agency in my community. But Tara's so much more than a business owner. And I think that's some advice I would give to other people who own businesses who are thinking of going through the same thing.
Coming up next on Power in Heels.
I think that's a big part of building confidence is letting go of people who don't serve you and who bring you down.
Now, switching gears a little bit, can you tell us a bit more about Ivana and how your position there came to be?
Ivana was actually one of our clients at Cult, and it happens every now and then that a person goes client side within an agency. When we first started working with Ivana, I had made a relationship. My job at Cult was to create relationships with CMOs, CEOs, business owners, and create a relationship for the agency and potentially find ways for us to work together. And when I met Jen Denauden from Ivana, I was really inspired by what her and the owners and the company were doing. So Ivana is a purpose-led business or a purpose-led rental developer. And what that means is they are trying to change the affordable housing landscape in Canada. And so there's not enough affordable housing in Canada. And that puts a lot of people in compromised positions. And so we can't even build fast enough at Ivana. And our other part of our purpose that leads us is we focus on second stage housing, primarily for women and children fleeing domestic abuse. What a lot of people in Canada don't understand is women and children fleeing domestic abuse, or just women and children in general who need housing, are among the most vulnerable. And what happens if they leave a violent situation and they go into a crisis center, then what happens after they leave the crisis center, if there's no affordable housing or what they call second stage housing, they either end up couch surfing, which is for lack of a better term, or they end up in a bad situation, or worse, they end up going back. Canada doesn't have enough second stage housing. Part of our purpose is to create spaces that are safe for women and children to live. And it's great because we build brand new rental properties for these people to move into. So when you think of affordable housing, you more often than not may think of a dilapidated or depressed area where people have to live. But we build in really prominent areas that are close to amenities like schools, grocery stores, parks, and people who need access to affordable housing or women and children who are fleeing domestic abuse get to move into a brand new place with all of these beautiful amenities. So they don't have to go, you know, live in affordable housing, which you might think could be in a depressed area. They get to go into this beautiful space. And so when I was offered the position as vice president at Ivana, it was obviously hard because I really did love a lot of aspects of my job at Cult. And I've been doing marketing for a really long time. And obviously now I'm not doing any marketing. I'm helping run the company. It was a hard decision, but I knew that it was the right decision because of the purpose of it. It's kind of serendipitous that I had been preaching and talking about being purpose-led in marketing for the last several years and how that's how companies become really successful and have cult-like followings and they do good in the world. And then I got offered this position at Ivana to come and be the vice president. It's a female-led company. And right now they have $400 million under asset and they should be at $1 billion between 2026 and 2030. They'll be one of the very few billion-dollar companies led by a woman. And she's 33 years old. And I think that's really cool.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome. So I wanted to be part of that. I'm really grateful for the opportunity and what we're doing every day. It's a completely new industry for me, obviously. building rental real estate and purpose-built rentals. Ultimately, it really aligned with my values. And the owners are incredible people. And they truly mean what they say when they want to change the landscape for affordable housing and for women and children. So it was a hard decision to leave, but I knew at the end that it was the right decision for me.
It sounds amazing. You guys are doing fantastic things. And I'm sure it is not easy for you because, you know, you once again have to learn a whole new industry. You're jumping into something that you don't necessarily have a lot of experience in yet. Can you talk a little bit about that jump and, you know, what you've learned so far? Maybe there are some really big lessons that you've learned when it comes to this whole new industry?
For me, like my job at Ivana too is to help lead people, right? And that's the same whether it's in an agency setting, which I did before at Aiden, or it doesn't really matter where you're at, right? It's just a different scale. People are people. And so I think that aspect of it comes natural. And I also think a part of my job as vice president is to find really great people and keep them happy. I like this quote that I heard once of this president of a Fortune 500 company in the States. And he said, "I didn't know how to do every job within the company, but I knew how to hire great people and keep them happy." That's always stuck with me is, you know, that's my job as a leader. That part's the same, but the other parts are not. I'm not going to lie that it's daunting some days and it can be overwhelming and hard, really hard. I just stop and think how grateful I am to be faced with a challenge, to learn and grow and exercise new muscles of my brain. And again, I'm trying to bring hindsight into the present and think about how this opportunity is shaping me as we speak. And it's hard. And, you know, last week I worked like almost 70 hours and it can be crazy, but it's enjoyable. And I'm every day just try to remind myself how fortunate I am to be in a position to, one, help others, lead an incredible organization, and also to just challenge myself to grow in a way that I never thought I would, learning a lot about real estate. And so it's a brand new challenge. And I'm just trying to be really present in it all and remind myself that I'll look back one day and this job will be easy because right now it's challenging. And I don't want to forget this moment of the grind, you know, the early mornings and the late nights and the weekends learning. And I want to be really grateful while I'm in it because at one point in my life, I don't want it to ever become mundane and I don't think it will, but there'll be a time where it becomes a lot easier and I don't want to forget about these times. It's a big learning curve, really just really grateful to be challenging myself in a brand new way and for the opportunity to be able to do that.
Thank you to our sponsor, Mackenzie Lake Lawyers.
Looking back at, you know, everything you've told us so far, it really seems like a big lesson to be pulled from this would be that opportunities are absolutely everywhere. You have to push for them and you have to put yourself out there to get them, right? Because, you know, your merger that came from what was supposed to be a 15-minute phone call with the CEO, right? Like these opportunities, you know, they don't come your way unless you really stick yourself out there. And that's what you have been doing. You've been pushing yourself and reaching out to other people. And then this new job of yours, the career, it came from, you know, a client. So these, you know, opportunities are everywhere. And, you know, doing exactly what you're doing, you know, being there, being present, really definitely helps to get these opportunities and to push that way. So if you maybe had to speak to, you know, young females that are entering whatever industry they are, you said you're pretty natural at, you know, picking up the phone and calling somebody, but a lot of us aren't. Yeah. So do you have any advice for young women when it comes to, you know, reaching out and trying to grasp these opportunities that are there?
Yeah, absolutely. It all starts with building confidence in yourself. Once you become super confident, there's this term that I don't love, but I like the meaning. It's like that with, and it's it's basically when you build this like inner confidence and you really like who you are. And I think that begins with living by your values. So making value-based decisions instead of environmental decisions. Environmental decision might be like, let's say, you know, you have plans with a friend tonight, it's storming out and you're like, you know what, I'm going to cancel because it's a little bit cold. Your value-based decision would say, no, I made plans, my friend needs me, I'm going to go anyway. Making more value-based decisions in your life allows you to become more confident in who you are. And then just like every day, this sounds cheesy, but just like looking in the mirror and reminding yourself every day, three things you really like about who you are as a person. And that helps build confidence too. The other part of confidence, I believe, is letting go of people who don't serve you and who bring you down. And once you have a core group of people who are, you know, constantly in your corner and mention, you know, your name in a room full of opportunities, and they're kind to you and they build you up and they tell you, you know, how great you are, but they also challenge you when you're doing something that's not so great, you get to a place where you just don't care about rejection. And rejection is part of the reason why I find why people get stifled is they're afraid to be rejected. And so they are afraid to make that call. They're afraid to reach out. I've reached out to so many, I have so many mentors that are amazing. And for the conference, I just messaged some of the top CMOs in North America and asked if they'd come to speak. And some said no. And a lot said, hey, tell me more. And I think where that comes from is having a high self-worth and confidence that I've built because I've made value-based decisions and I've built this core group. And I think anyone can do that. And then when that happens, rejection just slips away because it doesn't matter. So if you go to reach out for that opportunity or, you know, in your room for people and you're being your authentic self, you lose this fear of being rejected. That helps you to create opportunities for yourself. You are so much stronger because at the end of the day, if someone in a crowded room says, you know, something negative about you while you're being your authentic self, or you reach out to somebody and they say no, or tell you to get lost, it's okay because you go home, you like who you are, you've got a core group of people who like you as a person, and the rest doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Well, that's, yeah, very good advice. And I'm going to take that advice too, even after this interview. I guess like going back to your discussion about making value-based decisions, a really good example of this was when you stood behind the Me Too movement with your agency. Even though a lot of people repeatedly told you that it would hurt your business and a lot of other negative things. But can you talk to us a little bit about how, I guess about this decision first and then what it meant to you?
Yeah, sure. So I always believe that when you own a business, whether you want it or not, you have a platform because, you know, more people know about you. And so that gives you a voice. And you get to choose how you want to use that voice. More often than not, businesses don't use it for anything except for promoting themselves. And I think that's really boring. Talking about yourself is boring. And so we decided as an agency that we would use our voice to promote community and to build community up. And then it shifted into using our voice to stand up for oppressed people. And whether that meant, you know, getting behind certain movements that we believed in or just showing up for our community in different ways, for rallies or whatever, we always used our social media to amplify voices and our own voices to amplify voices of others who may not be able to use theirs. When the Me Too movement kind of came through our city and there was a lot of survivors, whether it would be sexual harassment or any types of trauma or abuse, and people were being called out, we had a choice to make. And as a female-led agency, I decided that I was going to use my voice. I had talked to a few of my male colleagues, not within the agency, but just within business world. I remember one had said like, don't do that. Just like sit down, be quiet because it's going to be bad for business. I know you care about this, but there's other ways to support. Just quiet. And I just thought like, no, I can't. Like my purpose and who I am and my values say that I need to be there for these people who need that support right now. And so our agency put out this post and I was so nervous about it. And it said, burn the patriarchy. After that, it was shared like hundreds and hundreds of times on our social media to people's stories and to people's inboxes. Prior to that, we were a pretty popular agency because we were really community focused. So a lot of people knew about who we were. Prior to that, there wasn't a lot of talk about the Me Too movement from individuals or from businesses. And after we shared that post and started talking about, you know, we believe survivors and we stand with survivors, more and more businesses started to share about standing with survivors and individuals did. It was almost like we had sparked or ignited, amplified bravery in people to share themselves because they were like, okay, this popular business in town is willing to put themselves second and put these people first. It gave them some bravery to share as well. And I thought that was a really cool thing. Something I'm really proud of in my life that I can look back on is being able to use my voice in that way and our voice at the agency. And it's interesting, also coming full circle again, which a lot of things do in my life. The business I work for now, Ivana, they're a unapologetic feminist business. And they fight the patriarchy every day. They will give money to women facing lawsuits for speaking out. They will use their voice. They put a lot of their energy towards, obviously, survivors of abuse and equality. And so how I actually ended up becoming really close with the owner of Ivana was because they saw what Aiden was doing and they respected a lot. And they said, yeah, okay, like this person believes the same things that we do. So it was really cool because it all happened because I made value-based decisions. Even though they were hard, they were scary, I felt anxious about them, but I knew it was the right thing to do. So making value-based decisions isn't always easy, right? It's the decision that will make you feel the most sense of pride in your decision-making and good about who you are.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And I know it is hard to go with what your heart feels is right versus picking the thing that is always deemed safe or, you know, approved by others all the time. Do you have any like specific advice that you maybe could go along with that for other young individuals when, you know, if they're facing something similar or they just, you know, are on the cuff of a decision and, you know, they're being pushed one way by other people and then being pushed their own way by their heart?
Yeah, you have to make the decision that is safe for you. And when I say safe, I mean, doesn't put you in like a compromised position. So it's interesting because like sometimes value-based decisions are dangerous because like, you know, if you were a survivor, it may not be the easiest for you to speak out. If you're thinking about making a value-based decision or not, because sometimes it's easier just to not and go with the flow of whatever it may be. The way to go about it is to think the only thing you can control in a situation is your actions. And when you come out of a situation and you look back on it, the only thing that you had control of and the only thing you can personally reflect on is how you acted. Mm-hmm. And so if you step outside of yourself and you can put yourself in the future, again, hindsight, you can say to yourself, hey, if I can look into a year from now, and I look back on this decision, will I be proud of the decision that I made? Will I think that it aligns with who I am and my values? Because that's the only thing that you can control. When you're making a hard decision, you have no control over anyone else's actions or reactions. The only thing you can control is the choice you make.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And it's easy to overthink these things, but it's important to just, yeah, pick what aligns best with your values and don't worry about what other people's opinions have on that because it's your life and you need to be happy, I guess, in the end. So.
Yeah. And you can't control other people's reactions, right? But it's worth like defining what your values are.
Yeah.
And then go from there and make decisions based on that.
Hey everybody, it's Whitney here. I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for more step-by-step guides to success from powerful women every single week.
Now, is there a specific time in your life that maybe you look back on now and know that in the moment it was really hard, but that you learned something really important or valuable?
Yeah. Oh, man. I have so many.
It's a tough question.
But yeah, I've talked a little bit about, you know, my career and job change. But personally, I would say like my brother passing away was a big one. Mm-hmm. And it really defined me because I think prior to him passing away, I always say like his name is Brian. And I say before Brian and after Brian because it was a different life and they call it a life-changing event because it is life-changing.
Yeah.
And I think it really helped to shape me into the person that I am. And it was really hard. And I went through a really tough time. And I think when you face loss and grief, you don't realize, but like your whole life is changing when you lose someone that's close to you because everything that was before is no longer. And so, you know, going through that, I don't think I was quite young and I didn't realize, but before he had passed away, I was like quite, I would think of myself as a more selfish person. I like to say I was like standing on a carpet and it was made of me, me and more me. And that was ripped from under me when he passed away. And it was good because through his life, I was given a gift of getting to know him, but through his death, I was given the gift of getting to know myself. And I think I'm really grateful for that and thankful for that. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever grown through. And it was years and years of self-discovery and figuring things out and feeling really broken. And I think in order to rebuild yourself, sometimes you do have to break yourself down, right? And so that was one of the hardest, most challenging times of my entire life, but also one of the ones that I reaped so much reward from. And I'm grateful for, you know, the gift I was given in his life and his death because I was able to shape who I am today. It was super tough. And I just remember thinking, if I could just hold on to this little speck of light that's at the end of the tunnel, it will grow. So every day I just focus on the light. And eventually it got brighter and brighter and I was able to, you know, be happy again. And so I think in hard times, we just have to remember that they don't last forever. Nothing does.
You talk a lot too about, I guess, kind of looking for the positives in every situation and maybe not labeling certain situations as good or bad per se right away. How do you keep such a positive mindset and, you know, not tempted to be like, oh, well, that's so negative, like that, you know, didn't help me in any way.
Yeah, I think a couple things, if, at least for the last few years, I've been really focused on meditation and journaling. And I think that really helps because you don't realize like meditation isn't something that gives you this like instant gratification. I mean, it does in some ways, but it's actually like long-term things and you don't realize, but you're not as like reactive to things or like you're more patient. When something happens, and especially once since I've been meditating over the last few years, it allows me to have this, create this space between something happening and a reaction. I've been able to stop and think and take a pause when something happens and realize that like, it's neither bad nor good. It just is. And I read this story once, I won't tell the whole thing, but it's basically good or bad, I don't know. And it basically states that like, when things happen, there could be good that could come from it, even if it is a bad situation. And so you can't label it as good or bad. When we do label something as bad, it has more opportunity to turn into a bad situation where we don't see any good out of. But if we just label it as so and something that happens, it can take shape into whatever it may, right? And so I've had a lot of things that people may label as bad happen to me in my life. But to be honest, everything that someone on the outside may label as bad has actually shaped me for the better.
Now, that's a fantastic lesson. I mean, you seem to be an individual who really focuses on, you know, self-growth and learning. And I know that you mentioned to us last time that we talked that you actually decided to go back to school again to pursue an education in sociology. Are you still doing that?
So yes, I am. I had to take a break just during this transition into this new job because I don't know where I would sleep or eat.
I mean, that's important too.
But I feel like things are in my life are always like manifesting in the way that I project them, because like with sociology, I took a class last year on personality and how it intertwines with specifically the homeless population. And it plays so much into my job right now, because a lot of affordable housing, we are trying to support chronically homeless people. Now I'm taking that and I want to shape my sociology degree into a focus on gender equality and not just, I wouldn't say just like homeless people, but less fortunate. And I'm going to try to shape my degree into more focused on what Ivana is focused on, which is kind of the direction I was already going. So I always want to challenge myself to be learning. And I hope that, you know, I've studied so many different things at this point in my life, and I hope that I continue to learn. And I know as you're in university, you might be like, no, I can't wait to get out. But once you are, and you start taking things for fun and not worrying about timelines, so once you're working, for me, I am just taking two classes a semester and I'm not in any hurry. I'm not doing it for any other gratification or any, I'm not trying to get a job. I'm just doing this to learn more. And I think that's a really beautiful thing when it comes to education. So I hope that even when I'm done sociology, that I learn something else, maybe another language. I don't know. We'll see.
And it's nice to just like learn and not worry about grades or marks or what anyone else thinks. It's just nice to just learn something new. That's all that matters.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like C's get degrees has never been more true.
Exactly. There you go.
Because I'm not doing this to try to, you know, get into another school or do anything. I'm just wanting to learn. And so I take the classes to challenge myself to learn. And I think when you get to that point, it's a really good thing.
Before our interview, I was kind of stalking your Instagram a little bit, and I noticed that you have a highlight titled Thoughts. So I thought I would just kind of scroll through it and see what kind of thoughts you had there. And and one of the stories you talked about, it's like, oh, don't worry. You talked about how often our life choices are dictated by what would please other people instead of ourselves. So I know we kind of talked about this a bit before in the interview, but do you have any advice or just words for thought when it comes to living a life that's for you and not for those that are around us?
In life, we, especially when we're younger, we think about, you know, maybe what our parents would want for us or an outside the school would want for us. We don't often stop to think about what we want for us. And as you get older, it's thinking about like the job title or a different exterior motive that might push us in a direction. And I think that's like the world dictating what you should be. It's really important when you start to like look at your values and who you want to be and start to shape your life around that and not what anyone else in society and family and friends are telling you that your life should be. A way that I did that is one of my mentors at one point had said to me, like, say you're on your deathbed, you're looking back and there's something you regret. What would that be? And for me, it was like not cultivating enough relationships. And he asked that of me because he wanted to challenge me to not end up in a spot where I had that regret. I go back to that a lot, and it helps me to shape who I want to be in this world. It allows me to let go of what other people are trying to put on me and project on me, because that's what we do. We project onto others. I do it. Everyone does it. We need to think about the person that we want to be. What do we want the obituary to say when it's our time, or when we're laying, you know, at the end of our life, what do we want to be our story? And you may not have any friends around. And the only thing that will matter is that you don't have regrets.
As much as we'd love to talk to you forever and ever, unfortunately can't, we have to take the interview to the end. Before we end, is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners? So any last words, the time is yours.
Yeah, I think there's so much. I would say just like focus on being the best that you can be and don't be so hard on yourself and, you know, lead with your purpose, figure out what that is, be authentic and don't worry so much about what other people think. And I know that's a pretty cliche thing to say, but life gets a lot happier when you're not living it for other people. Don't be afraid to make that phone call or reach out. I think in life we have this idea that expectations are put on us by other people, and have expectations of yourself instead. For me, it's about cultivating relationships. So I make choices with that in mind all the time. So be authentic, be yourself. Don't be afraid of what other people think and just go back to that driving point of who you want to be in this world.
Well, that's a really, really good piece of advice. Thank you for that. And thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, I learned a lot. Macy, I'm sure you learned a lot too.
Yes, definitely.
This is a great conversation and I'm sure our listeners really, really enjoyed it as well. So thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time. This was really great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today and thank you for being a part of our audience and our network. Don't forget to hit subscribe. And of course, if you have any ideas for our show, you can chat directly with us on our website.
This is